Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh! Let him play!
I agree.
Their second best player is Jan Ervis Solarte. I mean, come on.
Solarte.
They are...
Never nervous. Jan Ervis. City is dead. The stadium is dead. And then an hour later, I'm horned. Yankee Magic. I'm running through walls.
As we always say, you know, the board is the board.
It's the truth.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
We pick it up in the eighth inning with the score 1-0. Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big movie show and other stuff as we begin our next in our series of random questions podcasts. Filling our not much of a summer off season. We've been talking about so much NBA, so much football, golf. I don't think we talked about the World Cup, and that's how busy it was. We didn't even get a chance to talk about soccer during this entire summer, but it's been an exciting summer, much more exciting than normal. So this is really the first downtime we've had, and it's already August the 7th. And tonight, I wanted to take this in a different direction. I want to talk some movies and... the movie industry, the movie-going experience, and all things movies. And you know what that means. That means we're going to have our man a couple quickies on the program to talk that and some other stuff on America's favorite moment in sports talk podcasting. Where is it? It's been so long, I forgot. I couldn't find the jingle. So on America's favorite moment in sports talk podcasting.
Do the dance. It's time for random questions.
And we miss Kevin. I hope he's doing all right out there in the Northeast. But for now, we bring in a couple quickies. Quicks, how's it going tonight?
I'm a pale imitator of the old junk fan, but I'll do what I can, Dave.
Absolutely. I mean, he's. I know that they're doing great things. You should see him. I met him last year. Was it last year? It may have been just a few months this year, but he. You'll blow you away. The dude's as thin as a rail.
Oh, I've
now.
Heard. I've heard.
Unbelievable.
All the love, and I'm very happy to hear the junk man is rebooted, reborn as a $6 million man with all the hardware upgrades he needs, and he's flying high, loose as a goose.
Absolutely. It's pretty awesome. So I brought a quick son tonight to talk about this incredible new movie called Sorry to Bother You, but we were in the middle of a conversation about the Yankees before we went on air, so I think I picked that up first. So now, what is the situation with the game? I haven't checked on that since I last spoke.
I ducked away to be a great podcast guest, so let me just fire this up here and I'll see where we're standing. I was, we can't do play-by-play on the radio, folks, but I last checked, the Yanks were getting no hit. The immortal No Dick Hicks broke it up. Giancarlo Stanton hit a smash. We had first and third. We had a whole new day. And the Yanks could not push a run across, despite the fact CeCe Sabathia, 10 Ks through five innings. So,
wow.
Still 1-0. 1-0 pale hose in the south side.
Yeah, pale hose indeed. It's this team that barely has any offense and has no pitching and has no bullpen. It is a team that's trying to come up with, it's trying to start over. They're trying to build all these prospects.
So in the game between the teams, five hits, one run.
Wow.
And six innings in Chicago.
Wow.
Imagine making that trip. You'd want to hang yourself. Have a Lou Malinotti pizza and drown yourself in it. Isn't that funny, Dave?
Well, here's something funny. The broadcasters on the Chicago
Dave,
White Sox.
Can we curse on this, by the way?
Of course.
I just got to say, before we go any further, just fuck Lou Malinotti's pizza. This fucking Chicago deep dish bullshit fucking. It's like eating a towel with ketchup on it. It's disgusting. And these Chicagoans shouldn't be allowed to get away with it. That's all I gotta say.
Most
overrated food town in America.
The more you get to know pizza, the more you would come to that conclusion. Now, would you even call that pizza at this point?
Absolutely not. I wouldn't call it lasagna. I don't know if I damn well call it food. But it sure as shit ain't pizza.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Fucking. Just, it's such Midwestern cornball dick shit fucking crap. Fucking. We're going to make a nice Italian pizza out of cornmeal. Go to fucking Naples and find me a fucking piece of corn. There ain't no fucking corn in Italy. So shove whatever this concoction you've made up your ass. The only thing worse than Chicago pizza is Scranton pizza.
Oh, I can't even imagine what that is. Oh, what
well, I'll tell you the rub in Scranton pizza. They put fucking cheddar cheese on the pizza. Are you kidding me? If your life isn't bad enough in Scranton, you got to eat cheddar cheese on your pizza? It's disgusting.
What? Yeah, that wouldn't be good by itself. I mean, you can maybe cheddar with.
You know what you call cheddar cheese on a pizza? A fucking open faced grilled cheese sandwich on pizza.
Oh, God, that's funny. Oh,
no wonder these Rust Belt idiots have lead in their water. Fucking, that's what they deserve. Fucking momos.
Oh dear, that's funny. That's good.
I'd rather eat a piece of Elio's. I'd rather eat a pizza bagel than this goddamn swill. Ow. Anyway, Dave. Yeah. We're getting way far ahead already. Sorry.
Well, that certainly was an unexpected turn, right? So yeah, it's really interesting. You know, the Yankees everybody, you know, the broadcasters from the Chicago station when they were doing the game, the same two teams yesterday. We're saying that it's usually that second game that hits you after an extra long inning game, and then you debunk that somewhat because saying that the travel is pretty cushy, which it is.
Well,
I mean,
we
2 hours.
Into that. You know, I'm just sick of these teams complaining so much about the travel.
Yeah.
You know, if you're telling me we're going to play in Los Angeles day game the next day after a night game in Boston, okay. It's a fucking chartered plane from Boston. It's a 2.5-hour flight at best. Right. You're going to a 5-star hotel in Chicago. You're playing at night the next day. I'm sorry, guys. That's Major League fucking baseball. You gotta you play a night after a night game sometimes. It happens.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And it worked. And it worked out fine in game number one. I mean, they won, like you said, 7-0. And Lynn, you mentioned that you really wanted him, and it's funny because I did too. I actually wanted the Dodgers to get him, and I really thought that the Dodgers had dodged a bullet by not getting him last year because he looked awful in the first, I don't know, 4 or 5 months of the season.
Well, he definitely spit the bit early, but you look at all those guys and you got to wonder how it'll affect this offseason in terms of, you know, these guys signing late. Everyone that signed late,
right.
I think they all kind of struggled. I know Alex Cobb did.
Right.
You know, I can't think of anyone else that signed late off the top of my head. But
Moustakas,
none of them came out. He did okay. No, he was.
Yeah, I think he did all right.
I'm assuming it's different for a hitter. You know, look at Greg Holland. He signed late and he got freaking cut. You know, so. So yeah, if you weren't in camp, it's no matter how much you try to turn it up, no one's going to turn it up. Like if you got a coach yelling at you, I guess. So.
Right. Good points. I mean, it's. You know, if you start late. You have catching up to do no matter what. So that's a good observation. That is a good observation. So maybe, and then that, and plus going to a winning team may have energized him. And he was playing the White Sox. Let's be fair. He was playing a terrible team.
Well, that's the number one factor. So take it all with a grain of salt.
Yeah,
the White
exactly.
Sox.
And Cap was
can't go too crazy.
No, you can't.
But they have the White Sox have some good players, though. But still,
they do have
you know,
a few good players. That's
a hitter's
that
park. But yeah, you can't go too crazy. Let's
yeah.
see him.
For sure. For sure. So we'll see if anything changes in that White Sox game. While you watch that, I am watching the Dodgers against the Red Hot Athletics, the team that people, some people think could challenge the Astros for the division. And you look at the division standings right now; it's not that far fetched. They're actually only a couple of games back. I'm like, that's how hot the A's have been. They have been crazy hot, and I think their best pitcher.
And the Astros are all banged up.
Very. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they lost Springer to a 10-day DL. Correa's still not back. Altuve's on DL2. I mean, that's rough. And then adding to that, one of their top four pitchers, Lance McCullers, is on the DL. Now, not only is he on the DL, but the Astros people are saying he's not going to be back for the rest of the month. That's rough. He's not going to be back for a month. So,
well, it sounded like he was on the road to Tommy John. I guess we'll see what happens, you know, once they reevaluate him, you know.
I gotta talk
for that telltale elbow.
Yeah.
Where are you at with them? Where are you at with them getting Osuna, Dave?
I thought that was just a terrible job out of him. I can't stand it. It makes me sick to my stomach. I saw him get the win.
I really agree with you, you know, and I'm normally all for giving these guys a second chance, you know, but if you had never won a World Series, okay, but you're coming off a World Series, mm-hmm. you got to bring that guy in, I would worry about the karma of bringing that guy in.
It's such a bad look. And there are guys on the team that basically didn't want him on there. And still don't.
Oh, I never heard that. Wow.
Yeah, Verlander's been a very vocal opponent of domestic abuse, and he certainly was ambivalent in his commentary after the fact. And Bregman just wanted to change the subject, and Altuve was just doing the company line of like, well, you know, it's just an unfortunate incident. Not all the facts have come out, but I think deep down inside, most of these guys really don't want to deal with him in the clubhouse. And he can apologize if he wants. And I'm sure that's what you're going to do in a situation like that. But you just can't. There's just no going back. I mean, we're going to see how much evidence bears out in this scenario. But, you know, you just can't do that. Like, I don't care how desperate you are to get bullpen help. And I know their bullpen's bad, but that is a terrible
job. No one's that desperate, though. You know,
exactly.
It's true, though.
Yeah. I mean, I know how good he is.
You told me the Dodgers got him, I'd say, all right, you're 30 years from a World Series. Desperate times call for desperate measures, you know.
Well.
We'll let a wife beater in the mix. You got a total house money year as the Astros.
Yeah.
You got to bring in, you know, this guy. It's really,
it's very peculiar.
Really wacky.
Absolutely. It's very peculiar. I mean, you got to have a little more confidence in your pitching staff than that anyway. I mean, you couldn't find a guy in the minors that could be just as good. I mean, it's just weird. It really is. Like, they've got a pretty good farm system. I think they still do. And they could have gone after any of a number of guys. They could have gone after Britton. They could have gone after even Alex Colomé, although that would have had to have happened a long time ago because remember, the Mariners picked him up a while ago, like about 2 months ago.
Yeah, yeah. But Soria went at the deadline.
Yep,
you know,
another one.
Like, then anyone up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if they were, they could have gotten Greg Holland if they really wanted to, I guess. But you know, like all of that would have been more sensible. Like it's just bad juju. I just can't imagine how that's going to play out long term. It's going fine so far. They won their two games since he came off the suspension. But you know, it's one thing when you do that. Now I understand that the GM made a point that the Astros have a zero-tolerance policy with domestic abuse, and then they trade for this guy. I mean, that you just look like a horse's ass.
Apparently not.
No. Zero tolerance.
Apparently they have occasional tolerance.
Yeah, that's a little rich, right? Like, that was just ridiculous. So
zero tolerance, and unless it's a position of need. Then we...
Yeah, unless our bullpen stinks, and then we'll reevaluate the tolerance level. Yeah, that was bad.
Let's be honest, Dave. I'm not even sure spousal abuse is illegal in Texas. I mean, they're so backwards down there.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You know, the scenario with the guns, the scenario with everything. It really does operate under its own rules.
They really do. They have their own little flag, and they're very happy with the Republic of Texas.
Yeah. But you know what always gets me is like all these businesses moving there, and I get it. There's no tax, blah blah blah. But you know, it's like 120 degrees in the summer. It's like, do you really want to? Yeah, but it's cheaper. It's no tax, blah blah blah. You can do what you want. Yeah, yeah.
I can't get past the high school football. You're putting 30,000 people in a fucking high school football stadium. I know. I mean,
they got on them though. It's crazy.
It's clearly its own island of psychosis.
Yeah. Yeah. But
they gave us Stevie Ray Vaughan. We can't hate him too much.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. No, Texas.
Thank God for SRV
and Texas Instruments. Not even on the same category as Stevie Ray Vaughan,
exactly.
But still, we had Compact for a while. We have what else is good from Texas? Barbecue, beef ribs, yum. That's really good. Big fan of the barbecue. Gave us Austin. University of Texas at Austin.
That's true.
It's killer. I love that place.
Did they give us True Detective? Was that filmed there, or was that New Orleans?
I would have to defer to you on that. I don't know. But
I don't know either.
Yeah. I love the university. I hated Texas football for a long time because they were... You go back to that 2006 Rose Bowl. It's just tough to take. It was tough to take
that
blowing that game.
Well, for you, not for the rest of America.
Oh, no. It was a great... obviously, everybody else loved it. And
we were all one with Vince Young that night.
Well, you know, it's completely fair. It's completely fair. USC was definitely talking up. It was really what was it that you would say you would believe the press clippings? They were definitely doing that in the weeks leading up to that game. I remember it well. Yeah, but is this the best USC team of all time? Like, geez, win something first.
That was the ultimate. And they gave us Greg Popovich, so that's not too bad.
Pop is king with you in that. And San Antonio is pretty chill too. So it's like San Antonio and Austin are both great in my book. So I'm good with them. Everybody else, you know, you take it on a case by case basis. I would probably get lynched if I went into small towns around there, but I'm not gonna go there. But I like Dallas. No, that's all right. It's all right. It's funny because
it's probably true.
Exactly. I was gonna say it's funny because it's true. but Dallas was cool. I was in Dallas for a bit, and I liked Houston as well. Houston was nice. The airport in Houston is
well. Now you're getting me fired up again. Let's not forget Dallas killed Kennedy.
Fair point.
I'm never gonna let these bastards live it down.
Fair point.
They fucking make money off it as a tourist attraction. Would you get lost?
It's a little weird, but I didn't know they actually charged for that. That is kind of weird.
I assume they do. I'm sure there's Kennedy shirts. Anyway, Dave.
let's get to our main topic tonight. It's not really that main, but it'll be one of several topics. It's a movie I saw and you saw that called Sorry to Bother You, which really just, you know, snuck into the theaters, not really announced or anything. I did see a screening for it before the movie was officially released at the theater I was at, and a bunch of people were gathering for that, and the poster was intriguing, so I'm like, okay, I'll see what this is about. And the movie's about... Okay, let me remind everybody listening tonight, if you have not seen Sorry to Bother You, the movie, you need to skip ahead to, I don't know, like the 50-minute mark of the show, because we're going to be talking about
give
this.
Give us a solid 10 minutes.
Yeah, we have a lot of spoilers, so if you don't want to have the movie spoiled, skip ahead quite a bit, and we will move on to other stuff. So, yeah, anyway, the movie, this was a great movie. Like, this was a really interesting movie. I was just kind of kicking it, like, okay, this is a funny movie, let me go see it. Wasn't really, you know, didn't really have a bar. I had no expectation. And I go in, and I end up getting the most captivating movie of the year. It's a story about a lot of stuff, but it's about a little bit of the American dream. The filmmaker said that it was about communism. Boots Riley directed the film and wrote it. Very good casting, although I don't know many of the people in it, although a couple of notable names. Patton Oswalt even had a role. So, Danny Glover had an incredible cameo. That was awesome. I didn't even know it was him. But then when he said, I think he snuck in. Didn't he sneak in and I'm getting too old for this shit in that movie?
I missed that if he did, but I hope he did.
He might have. And never mind me.
I think he actually did now that you're talking about it. I didn't even connect it now that you're saying it, but yeah.
So definitely jogged my memory.
Well, do you want to give him the loose plot? I forget the main character's name, but
is brilliant. The name is of the character is Cassius Green or Cash Green, which is a total double entendre.
He's
trying to make a living. He gets excited to get a telemarketing job, and he's trying to move up in the telemarketing job company.
Well, he's so desperate, he lies to get a telemarketing job. He pads his resume. It's a great way the movie kind of kicks off. And he brings his trophy into the job interview.
Yep.
And the premise is he gets a telemarketing job and Danny Glover. So we kind of take an instant detour into, I guess, a bit of a fantasy realm. I think it would properly be called, at least in literary terms, magical realism, I think is probably the proper term for it, where Danny Glover shows him how to use his white voice, or tells him to use his white voice to enhance his telemarketing sales. And the movie's got its devices where he gets dropped into, you know, different, you see him get dropped into the living room. And then we're kind of off and running. And it's, I think, a very... probably timeless contemporary tale, I guess you could say. At the same time, timeless and contemporary. The employees are kind of fighting for their share and, fighting to unionize in the telemarketing firm. But Cash gets promised the possibility of rising. And I forget what do they call that room?
Basically
when he goes upstairs.
Yeah. They call him a power caller or something like that.
Power caller.
Yeah.
Power caller where he can make the big deals.
Yeah.
All during the, we're definitely in spoiler world, folks, so just be ready. So one of the undercurrents of the movie is they're advertising this. Essentially, it's a prison.
Yeah.
But it's like a prison where you agree to, you get your room and board covered, your food covered, and you have nothing to worry about, and you just work for the company making God knows what, which ends up, I think at the end, we find out it's kind of weapons and, it's essentially a slave allegory, or not even really an allegory. It's a sort of direct implication that you're sort of a slave if you're involved with this company. And Cash is selling, what's he really doing? I guess he's, in a roundabout way, he's selling to advocate for that company. And so he's kind of caught in between, staying with his friends and his girlfriend, who's also, a pretty big part of this, who's an artist, staying true to that, staying true to a working man's work ethic, or does he sell out and he takes the big money and the long cash? And so that's kind of the central driving device of the movie. But, what would you say, Dave? The plot is a little bit secondary to the whole movie because it's more about the experience of seeing the movie. And it's just kind of...
I think that's an interesting call.
Wildness and weirdness.
It's trying to undo the layers of this onion of just incredibly bizarre alternate universe in Oakland, in which looks like present day, but you just never truly know with some of the stuff that you see on this movie.
Yeah,
and then the big reveal, and I won't spoil this, but the big reveal about what this other company is doing to really up the ante with the quote unquote workforce. It is mind-blowing, which is why I don't want to spoil that, because you have to see the movie to see how mind-blowing really is.
So you're 1,000% on board with it, Dave.
Oh, wait, with the idea or the movie?
Well, with the whole... Because I'll be honest with you. Now, I may be bringing a little bit more of a needlessly Captain No Fun critical eye to it, because it's a low budget movie, it's an independent low budget movie, and I might be being way too hard a marker, but it's honestly, see, this is what I'm trying to wrestle with. I'll say this, and I highly recommend everyone see this movie, just because it'll stick with you. I saw it a week ago, and that's how Dave and I kind of hatched the idea to do this, so we finally, or maybe 5 days ago, and it stayed in my mind ever since then. It's like, listen, I love Avengers of Infinity War. Great movie, fun time. But it's like, you walk out of the theater, you forget the goddamn movie by the time you get to your car in the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie sticks to your ribs. You will be thinking about this movie, whether you love it, like it, or hate it, or whatever. And I will say this, I walked out of it kind of, well, let me tell you my theater experience. So I saw this theater. I saw this in Clifton, New Jersey, which is an urban-tinged theater.
Urban-tinged?
Well, no, it's like, honestly, it's like borderline. It's not like seeing a movie in Newark or something.
Right.
But it's not like seeing it in some suburb either. It's just kind of like urban-tinged. It's a Ferris assessment.
To
give you a little context of the Clifton Theater, at least one Giant has been carjacked there. So, to give you a little context, it's right by Giant Stadium, and God knows what will happen to you there.
Right.
So, we won't spoil it, but if you remember, Dave, there's kind of the movie ends, and then there's a rather immediate epilogue.
Yes, yes.
Where Cassius is ringing the doorbell.
Yep.
So, as soon as the movie ends, this guy gets up with his three kids. He's like five rows in front of me, and he says, "Come on, we're going." And it's stadium seating. So as he's walking down the like the hallway, you can't see him, but you just hear. He's like, "That's why no one fucking goes to movies anymore with fucking shit like this." And the whole theater like breaks out laughing, like you know, because I think it's definitely a movie where you're left at the end saying, "What just happened here? Like, what, you know, where are we at right now?" So he somewhat summed up that vibe. It's just like a great like comic relief staying at the end of that movie. So that was just, you know, one of the more memorable parts of me of seeing it. So
it's not even the movie; it's just what the guy said.
Yeah,
well, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that. I think that it was
I agree too, but it's just funny that you know that's live feedback. That's a live poll in action. You know, that's a guy who like didn't get. Listen, you can't imagine there won't be people who don't get this movie or don't connect with it.
It is really bizarre. So you're absolutely right about that. Yeah, like it's totally.
Because I'll be honest with you, I didn't know how I felt, and I still I really got to give it another watch because I can't say I love this movie by any stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But I respect and appreciate so much that I'm thinking about it so much, which is kind of. To me, I would argue that's the number one thing a movie should give you, you know, beyond entertainment, is to kind of leave you with that debate. I took my 18-year-old nephew, and let me say this, too, about the movie. It's probably, compared to the movie, it's one of the greatest trailers I've ever seen. Like, if you can watch the trailer, and it's like you... I think within 20 minutes, you've seen every scene that's in the trailer, right? If I'm not mistaken.
You know, I never did see the trailer, so I don't...
Yeah, watch the trailer. It's honestly amazing. Because that's what lured me into the movie. Like, I'd seen the trailer. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, I cannot wait to see this movie. Yeah. And it was totally different from what I expected. And, like, they found the perfect way to market this movie where I don't know how else you could have marketed the movie. So definitely watch the trailer at some point because it's... It's super interesting to sort of see that play out.
Yeah.
Because they found the right accents to kind of get it to the broadest possible selection of people, I think, you know.
Yep, it's true.
And they emphasize the right beats and the right things. And, you know, the movie becomes so much more than what the trailer was, which is, you know, and again, another thing I love, you know, because, again, me having watched the trailer multiple times, actually, I was like, wow, 20 minutes in and we've seen everything in the trailer. I cannot wait to see where this movie goes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know if for me it lived up to the promise that followed that. You know, it becomes a pretty conventional allegory, in my opinion. I don't know what you think, you know, where it's kind of like that's where I'm like, so I don't know where I'm in between on this movie because it was a rather conventional allegory of, you know, do I, you know, take the money and do I, you know, advance in my career or do I stay principled? Do I stay part of the collective and, you know, fight this good fight as a, you know, as part of a unit? And,
like, and then the moment of redemption in the middle of that, too. Yeah, I see that. I see that. I can see the conventional storytelling involved.
Dave? I forget now.
I am 36. As of right now.
Okay, so you're a little older. I forgot. We're all getting old. See, I'm 41, and I see that movie, and I'm like, and it's funny. It's, you know, if I'd seen that movie at 25, I would totally be with Cassius saying like, "Oh my God, of course you gotta side with the strikers." But at 41, I'm kind of like, well, maybe Cassius, you know, you should be advancing, and you should be thinking about your own career. You know, it's like. So it was kind of, it's a weird, one of the movies that's kind of weird from that perspective where you have different stations in life and different values in life, maybe where you can see different sides of things, you know?
I think what's cool about it, though, I will make this comment, is that it doesn't really force you to take a side. It does kind of present it in a way where you could kind of see both sides of the movie. And I remember there being some pretty good intent to that effect where they're not really trying to say, hey, take this side or take that side. You're kind of just seeing it. And you're just saying,
I think that's fair. I think we do get to a side choosing by the end, I think. But it's like, then it's
the moment of redemption. Played out pretty obvious. But yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I'm still, It's funny, when we agreed to do this podcast, I was prepared to be a lot more vitriolic towards the movie. And now it's sort of settled with me where I'm not,
I think I recommend seeing it again, though, because you're going to catch a lot of other details about that movie that you'll appreciate.
Though. Oh, sure. Sure. Yeah. No, I'm sure I will.
I noticed that immediately.
It's a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a movie that's worth seeing again, just to see how the kind of dominoes fall.
Yeah.
I think it'll really... And I'll say this as a critique. I generally hate that when you have to put that kind of qualifier into the movie. But,
right.
Sometimes rules are made to be broken. And, this is one of those times where I would say there's a lot of lots of probably to digest in this movie. I didn't even realize. So Boots Riley is 47 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a member of the group The Coup, who was a rap group out of Oakland,
mm-hmm.
Who I remember in the 90s. I think The Coup was actually the band that, if you remember, they put out an album either the week of or the month before, blowing up the World Trade Center. And it was the album got banned after 9/11. If you search The Coup, spelled COOP, because they're, I know he basically comes from a very anti-capitalist background or pro-communist background, and that was kind of part of it. So just an interesting little factoid, a little nugget for the movie.
It seems to be consistent with his ethos, then, if that's true. Yeah, I mean, so the facts bear that out. That is interesting. Well,
I'll take you on a... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, no, I think I was about to lead to the same spot. You said you'll take me on a... And then I'll let you finish.
Well, no, I just wanted to, so I did a little homework for the podcast today, and I will say this. So this is every year, almost, it seems like you get the indie movie breakout hit, and it's kind of like the antiseptic to the big action blockbuster, big superstar movies, and, you used to get a handful of them. I remember, and we can go back to Napoleon Dynamite, but that was really almost Get Out last summer, kind of a smaller movie that kind of broke through, that's more rooted in ideas than action and that kind of stuff. And, most of these movies kind of come out in Oscar season, but every so often, they kind of put more youth-oriented ones out in the summer, it seems like, where they can kind of, find their audience. And so to that end, I want to be prepared for the podcast because I'm a great podcast guest, Dave. I went to go see the movie Eighth Grade today.
Oh, right. You mentioned this. Now, I saw the trailer for that. So,
okay.
Share.
Well, it's so funny because it's you wonder what the cultural difference is.
Right.
I don't really... I don't know. Maybe it's awkward to say. I don't look at Sorry to Bother You as a black movie, quote unquote, per se. Although it's very heavily, so much of it is driven by the racial identity, given Use Your White Voice and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And it's maybe it's me being Pollyanna or naive or, whatever you want to say. But it's I watched Eighth Grade. And I'm this is an extremely white movie. I don't know what the cultural crossover for it is, but it's in terms of the detached Instagram era white teenager, it is extraordinary. It is, it's kind of it picks up where Lady Bird leaves off and goes even further and better. And I love Lady Bird from last year. Yeah,
I did see Lady Bird, so wow.
I cannot say enough about this movie. It's honestly fantastic, but it's I don't know if
you don't
I'm
know
just
if I'll enjoy it.
If I can recognize kids I know in this movie, where it is such a movie. I mean, there's a thought you make movies to be timeless, I kind of said before with Sorry to Bother You or whatever. This movie will be dated by the fall. It is so rooted in this moment. So it's it'll be very interesting to see kind of what becomes this movie. But in terms of bottling up a snapshot of what, 2018, almost the summer of 2018 looks like
it really nails it. And the common thread of these movies is, like, they're both very rooted in identity. So I know you haven't seen Eighth Grade, so we can't break it down too much. But it's, you know, just to give you a little you know, feeling or feedback for it. Maybe you see this in the trailer. It's, you know, she's basically a girl that, like, you know, puts so much of her life through social media. You know, be it she does, like, a YouTube, like, you know, kind of blog, you know, mm-hmm. video blog type of thing, and she's, like, always on Instagram, and it's like she's otherwise comparatively miserable, and she has no connection with people, but, you know, she has this manufactured identity of, you know, kind of happiness and contentness through social media. And the movie kind of really gets inside of that dichotomy, which I think is, you know, a very, very now thing, a very new problem we have, you know, culturally, maybe not a problem, but a new thing. I don't know, a new situation culturally, you could mm-hmm. say. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. But so, yeah, I was just kind of taking it. You know, I think that's going to be like one of the indie darlings of the summer. So it's like, it's nice to have a couple of these movies kind of happening in what's normally Avengers Ant-Man time, just to have something move, you know, kind of poke and prod your brain a little bit. But it's so funny how these movies are, in so many respects, to me at least, kind of two sides of, like, the other coin. Mm-hmm. You know, I just to get back to, sorry to bother you, and all right, 5 minutes super spoiler alert, you know, it's like, I think my issue with just Sorry to Bother You is that, and it's kind of a question you can ask at movies, and I don't know what you think, Dave, or maybe I overthink this shit way too much. Certainly would not be the first time. But it's you know, if you're going to be surreal and have magic realism and kind of, like, you know, there's technically no rules for art, right? You can do anything you want with it. You know, you can go through an entire movie and everyone stop and say, hey, this is just fucking pretend. I'm reading the script. You know, like, there's nothing wrong with that. But it's like, but with movies, there is kind of a concept, I think. And I think we almost talked about it on one of the Oscar shows one time. It's like, you sort of set your rules in your movie universe, and you know what happens. Like, you know, in Star Wars, people don't fly. That's why they got so mad when fucking Princess Leia flew through space. Because mm-hmm. they're like, wait a minute. We know what Star Wars is. People don't fucking fly. Like, we know there's crazy shit. Like, we know there's going to be lightsabers and dead blue ghosts talking to me. But it's like, no one fucking flies. Like, so you have to follow the rules of your universe. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, I don't know if Sorry to Bother You got me there with the way the movie ends, if, you know, because that really takes you out of their universe that they've brought you through this whole movie with. But mm-hmm. I've read other critics who say, like, maybe that's the whole point. You know, we're in such a disorienting time, and, you know, it's funny. I read an interview with Boots Riley where he said, he said he had to take a line out of the script because one of the characters at one point, the guy who is head of, like, the prison farm thing, he says, and he wrote this movie in 2014, way before the current
I know
moment
this,
we're in.
Yeah, said, I know what the line was, yeah.
Yeah, make America great again.
Yeah, yep. yeah.
And he had to take it out of the movie. So yeah. It's, you know, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to be a more surreal time than we live in now, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, so.
But I kind of did.
That was my one thought.
I kind of did enjoy that alternate reality. It almost seems like an alternate reality in which Trump doesn't exist based on what I saw the movie. And I kind of appreciated that. It's kind of like, this is a completely different reality, you know?
It's funny. I saw someone suggesting today, and I could see the case, because I read so much about the damn movie. It's this movie may be even set in the past, you know? It's maybe an older movie, you know?
There's no...
An older generation.
It could have been set... Yeah, you're right, because this... Just looking at the setting, looking at some of the... I mean, you know, Oakland's not exactly a posh area, but even at that, it does seem like it could easily have been set 10 years ago. It could absolutely have been set 10 years ago.
Yeah, with the cars and everything, mm-hmm. and, you know, it's, I mean, it could well be. And then just to piggyback on that, I don't know if you had more stuff, but, you know, I think in this continuing trend of what is looking like a phenomenal indie film summer, we have coming you know, I think this week or next week is Black Klansman from Spike Lee.
I have to think. So here's my thing about that. Now I'm going to let you run this down, and then I'll share my take on it, because I was not very interested in this movie, and I'll share more on that in a moment. But I'll let you run this down.
I am pretty well interested, and I'm more interested because it's gotten, you know, pretty great feedback and reviews. It's based on a true story, so the right. story is, I forget where it's set, but
Colorado, somewhere
right,
in Colorado.
Right. It's a black FBI agent goes to a small town, or maybe Denver, I forget which one, and he starts investigating the local Klan who's there. He basically, through phone interaction, infiltrates the Klan, but of course he can't show up there as a black guy, so there's a second agent who's got to basically be his Cyrano or whatever. He is Cyrano to that agent, where he shows up as he's the physical manifestation of the guy who is on the phone. Right. And it's kind of the true story of guys who kind of took down this Klan chapter who was up to no good. So again, you're almost in a similar pocket of, you know, identity, and certainly racial identity and that kind of thing. And, you know, it seems like certainly fertile ground to kind of explore and whatnot. So I'm just kind of excited based on the feedback I've heard. I've heard it's Spike Lee's best movie in 20 years. So,
people really saying that, huh?
I've actually heard it in almost like 25 years. So I guess that takes you back to like Malcolm X or almost Do the Right Thing, you know?
Yeah.
So it's supposed to be very good. So we'll see what happens. Well, but you're down on it.
I'm not feeling it. Well, look, I can watch it, and maybe I'll be, especially if it gets nominated for an Oscar. If it gets nominated for an Oscar, and I think it is because Spike Lee's involved, just because of his involvement. If it actually gets nominated for Best Picture, I will watch it at that point. But I'm not interested in watching it now because it's just such a derivative plot. Even though it is based on a true story and all that. I mean, I saw the trailer like 9 times. They had it before every movie. But it just feels like, you know, that sketch from Chappelle's Show where Chappelle goes in and pretends to be a KKK, or he didn't pretend. He's a blind guy, and he's in the KKK, and he doesn't know that he's black, and then he takes off his mask, and everybody finds out. It's like if you took that and made it into a movie. Like, that's my takeaway on this. It's supposed to be a funny movie, and there's a little bit of that for me. And like you mentioned, identity is a part of it. And just the idea of pitting, oh, white versus black, racism, and it's just, there have been a lot of that this year, understandably. But, you know, you go all the way back. You see that trailer for the movie about the girl and his poor boyfriend who got shot down by the cops, and there's a big old rape riot, blah blah blah. And you saw that movie, and you know they're just so heavy. That one is actually particularly heavy handed. I think it's already out of the theaters, but the movie.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And it's called The Hate You Give, and the initials are Thug, and it's just incredibly heavy handed. And then you had the movie, you had Detroit, which was set 50 years ago, but, you know, it's like, well, it's kind of like today, you know, that sort of thing. And so they're really beating you over the head with the white versus black racism angle this year. And speaking as a guy that's a progressive, that's speaking that guy that speaks out on these issues, I still think it's a little bit over the top now. But at least I'll say this with respect to Spike Lee, he's trying to take a humorous angle on it as opposed to the other movies, which are trying to be really serious. But it just seems I'm a little fatigued by the topic, so it's just not going to grab me right now, but maybe I will reach a point where I will want to see it, especially if they say it's really good. Like if it gets like a 90% or more score in Rotten Tomatoes,
I would keep your eye on it, you know, because I will say this in terms of, you know, Spike Lee getting Oscar nominations, I would say don't hold your breath because it's, you know, we know that's a very, political game and, Spike has not made the best friends of people in the Academy.
That's a good point. Yeah.
One of the crux issues is actually Clint Eastwood is still pretty juiced in Hollywood. And I remember just reading about that years ago, that it was some butting of the heads they had, and, you know, even going back to Malcolm X. Because if you look at the Malcolm X year, I mean, that movie is really sensational. It's an epic. You know, I forget what it was up against, but it probably should have won. I remember doing a breakdown 1 year of looking at it, you know, but and it may not have been nominated, or it was under nominated certainly, so you know, Don't sleep on it.
Don't sleep on it.
Good reviews.
Not even though it seemed derivative, it came off as derivative in the trailer. Do not sleep on it. I won't sleep on it. I'll feel it out. I'll see how it does. I'll see if there's a lot of positive buzz about it, and if it's positive enough.
You know what would be a great way to see that movie, Dave?
This would be interesting.
If you had MoviePass.
Oh, no, man. Oh, God. What's going on with the movie?
How's that for a transition?
Well, it's all yours on this. This is quite a fiasco.
Well, I just kind of, all right. So just to set the table for everybody, I don't know if everyone, you know, obviously they're movie nerds. There was this company, or still is, actually, this
for
company
now.
Called MoviePass. Yes. It was $10 a month. Mm-hmm. You could see a movie a day for a year. So, you know, let's say conservatively, a movie ticket costs, you know, $10. Average movie ticket costs around America $9. But, you know, we're living in the New York area, it's more like $12 or $15. So, we'll say 10 to be kind.
Right.
So you could buy over $3,000 worth of movie tickets with a little motivation and inclination, if you so desired, to see a movie every day. Well, it turns out this fucking genius business model does not work. because the company, there wasn't any magic deal. The company was like, just they said, all right, you buy the ticket, we'll reimburse the theater, and we're good to go, and we're gonna have all your data. It'll be great. And it turns out data isn't worth $3,000 a fucking year from every fucking schmo on earth. This fucking company got lit up like a Christmas tree.
Yep.
Their stock went from 800. Their stock of their parent company went from either $800 or $8,000. For the purpose of this exercise, it doesn't matter. But it goes from that number to 10 cents. So,
oh, man.
It turns out putting a Mongo in charge of your company and giving them, you know, say, give me your best business model. Dude, would that company get off the ground on Shark Tank? They'd fucking vote them off there, right?
Nah, it probably wouldn't.
But anyway, I like any good person, I take advantage of a good deal. So
yep.
I can say I at least got my money, you know.
That's good.
I think I'd seen 14 movies with it. And then, you know, the last 2 weeks it's been in total fucking, like, free fall. One day they're shutting down. Another day they're like, you can at least, that's been the great part of it. You really got to be inside of it to really appreciate it, I guess. But it's,
yeah.
They send you different update emails. So they
really?
Literally, they send three different changes to their whole platform in terms of service. They change plans three times in a week. So now where the roulette wheel is spun is now you can see three movies a month for $10,
yeah.
Which is still a pretty fucking good deal.
Is that the one where? But didn't they say that you can't watch like any of the blockbuster movies when they come out?
No, they rescinded that.
Oh, okay.
But I think the only limitation maybe is like you can't buy the 3D tickets, and you know I never buy the 3D tickets anyway.
Okay.
So, you can't buy the IMAX or whatever. So,
okay.
You know, small price to pay.
Yeah.
But believe me, I'm already seeing movies. I went to see Eighth Grade with my MoviePass. I reactivated MoviePass because chances are the whole thing's going to change again and this company's not going to see September. But, you know, we'll get our movies out of it. But
all right.
I wish I had more of a rant for you. They came back with a
they really completely redid their pricing plan structure in the like 2 days between when you had that rant and we went to air. That's
I really have to almost, you know, I wish I had had them all in front of me to kind of show you and walk you through it.
It's
it was
pretty,
crazy. Like they,
it really sounds like a circus.
Well, it's like, I'm sure it's everything you would teach a CEO not to do, like to send out these panicked emails of
yeah.
like, I can assure you we're getting to the bottom of this. you have my word that we are doing all we can to right the wrongs of MoviePass and blah, blah, blah. But,
that's hysterical. Yeah.
But, you know, MoviePass is interesting. It's funny. I saw a guy. Oh, I can't think of the movie now. I think it was a Blind Spotting that was out last week, which mm-hmm. is another independent movie, which is supposed to be pretty good. But it's amazing. Like you show, you know, the ripple effect of what, you know, MoviePass does. Because if you're on the fence about seeing a movie, so many of us say, oh, I'll wait till video, or, you know, I'm not going to spend $15 to go to the theater. But goddamn, if you got MoviePass, you know, you got $10 for the month, it's like, well, if I'm marginally interested in the movie, I'll just go check it out. You know, I'll get out of this summer heat and get the damn air conditioning for 2 hours and sit through a movie. You know, that was kind of what I did with Eighth Grade today. And, you know, I knew we were doing the show, so I was going to see it at some point, but I think MoviePass is great for kind of smaller films like that. You know, that probably gave them an audience, because that's the gimmick with MoviePass, is you have to, you can see a movie one time, and then you have to pick something else to see. So,
oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
If you want to see a movie
it probably sold a lot of tickets to shitty movies when people went back to see Infinity War 3 times.
Right. Interesting call.
Okay. So.
Well, that's cool, though. That overall, I think that's really, really neat. Like, I think that it was an interesting idea, but I just never thought it was going to be financially sustainable. Just the concept of it, I didn't understand how it was going to make any money. I was like, how's this going to end well? How are they going to make any money from this? Because they're basically paying back the theater for the purchases. And if you end up seeing more movies than, like, let's say the average ticket cost would have been, just like you said, like, there's a certain amount that you can see that'll break the, you know, the amount that you would pay for the movie.
Well, Dave,
pass.
Have you ever played roulette?
I have occasionally.
Okay. So, like, there's a thing I think every roulette player goes through, and it's a pretty common system. I think it's called, I don't know how it got the name, but it's called the Martingale gambling system, where everyone gets there in roulette at some point where they say, you know what, if I bet on black and I lose, I'll just double my bet and I'll bet on it again.
Oh no.
And if I win, I'm even. And if I lose that, I'll double my bet again.
Oh no.
And if I lose that, I'll double my bet again.
Oh.
I can't lose. I am guaranteed a win. But guess what? Sometimes you get 13 blacks in a row. So it seems like the MoviePass, like, fucking corporate strategy was, let's play Martingale with our fucking investors' money. if we get every person on Earth to sign up for this, we're gonna break even. It's gonna be great.
Oh, good. Yeah.
When meanwhile, they'd have to get fucking Martians to sign up for this to really.
Oh, man, that is too funny. You know, this is going to be a very memorable chapter in our nation's history. There's no doubt about it. Like, we're going to look back on this.
Is it ever? It really is a wild time.
Absolutely. I'm ashamed. I'm too bad. What happened here? Oh. I got thrown off because the TV went to commercial, and the commercial had like a yellow brightly lit room, and I thought it was like having another light on the right of my studio. That really threw me off. But it's a shame I couldn't have had in on it. Like, it would have certainly been a fun experiment. But when I first heard about it, I just thought, there's no way this is going to last a year. That's why I didn't do it. I'm like, because what happens if the company goes under before I can get in the number of movies that I think would be worth it? I was very concerned about that possibility.
Like, I've been reading a lot about MoviePass because you get so irate that you feel like it's so. And I don't know much about business at all, you know.
Right.
I'm an artsy fartsy mongo. What do I know? But I do know when you say we hope to have 500,000 subscribers in a year, which is what they kind of rolled out their price point at, to say, like, all right, $9 a month, we'll get this many subscribers and we'll get to 500,000 in a year. And that's great growth. They literally got that many in a single day. And they're like, oh, maybe we fucked up the price of it. On the one hand, they're like, hey, we hit our goal. Everything's great. we beat the clock 364 days early.
Oh,
Like, that's what I don't get about business, and I don't get about, you know, this era of, like, data collection and all that. Like, how much could data be worth at some, you know?
Yeah.
It, like, at some point, what the hell? It is not worth $3,000 a year to get the fucking random musings of some idiot. But, yeah. I don't know. I lost my train of thought.
It's all right, but
Dave, fear not. I know AMC is kind of they're ripping off MoviePass.
I saw that. Yeah. Own. Every time I go to AMC, they keep drilling me across the head. Go get our MoviePass. I was like, I could, but the problem is basic. I don't know if I've been kind of cheating on AMC. You know, AMC's been my movie chain for a long time, but. Gosh, Cinemark's doing some remarkable things. I don't know if you have Cinemark where you live, but Cinemark is pretty.
You know, they're starting to pop up. What's their gimmick? Do they have like couch or, you know, lounges to lay on?
It's
or something
a couple.
Like that, or...
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You bring that up. Yeah, there's definitely a lounge. They've got their balcony seating, which is similar to, I don't know if you're familiar with iPick or AMC Dine-In.
That's what just opened. That's starting to open up your iPick. That's the one I'm thinking of. Where it's like the, you know, lay down in bed or something.
Yeah. They had the couch, and then they had the in-seat service and the reclining chairs and everything. So now what Cinemark does is that they divide the theater into two parts. Like some of them. It's not all of them, but it's most of them. So they have the regular seating, and then the balcony for like three rows is the reserve seating, which is the, you know, the super fancy reclining chairs.
I would honestly love that. I've always liked the idea of a balcony, and I've never actually sat in one for a movie, so that would be fantastic.
My first experience with it was with Sorry to Bother You, so that was part of what made the experience fun for me. Like, it was really great. It's only $5 more than a regular ticket, at least in California, and you go up there, they take your order. You don't even have to get in line for the popcorn, but I do anyway, but you don't even have to do that. You just sit in your seat,
and they'll get
everything for you. The popcorn, beer, cocktails, food. The food's pretty good. I tried the wings. I like the wings. The burger looked good. Then they have nachos. They got everything up there. And that was important.
Well, you have ArcLight, right, Dave?
So
that's the big LA.
Yeah.
That's the gold standard of theaters as far as I've heard, right?
You know, in terms of presentation, it is. But they don't have VIP.
Because what's the deal there? There's no kids allowed, right?
I never thought about that. I guess not. I never thought about that.
I think I heard after no one under 18 on Friday and Saturday night, which would be fantastic.
That is fantastic. No, that makes a difference. But yeah, that really makes a difference. Like when you go to a theater, even you go to a theater in the middle of the day versus going at night. And then you add that, that's even better. And they were the first one to do the bar. Like they were the first one to do the bar with the alcohol you could bring into the theater. And they were way ahead of everybody on that. I do think that with some scenarios, they're a little behind. They don't have reclining chairs in any of their theaters, but, you know, their seats are okay. Isn't it
amazing what becomes a necessity? Like, I thought the same thing. I have a hard time going to theaters without a damn recliner now. Where it's like, who the hell ever thought of a recliner, like, a few years ago? But it's like, now it's become, like, it's another selling point of these damn movies.
Oh, there's no doubt.
I'm waiting for someone to come out with hammocks.
How about massaging chairs? You know, wouldn't that be fun?
Oh,
jacuzzis.
Dude, you would pay $40 for a 2-hour massage chair. I mean, without question.
Yeah. And you could see a movie. It isn't too bad. It is kind of nice. Yeah.
So. What we have here now is Alamo Draft House popping up.
Oh, I've heard about this.
I don't know if you have them in L.A.
I think there's one. I don't know if there's one in L.A., but there's one in San
Francisco. They're probably not needed with ArcLight, but they're, you know, they do great food. They have great specialty programming and all that shit. So.
And they bring the food to your seat, too? Is that what I remember?
They do. You fill out your little order card. Food's fantastic. And,
cool.
And Bob's your uncle.
Bob's your uncle. I love it. All right. Yeah. But they do specialty programming, too. It's not just regular films. They do, like, all sorts of trippy movies, too.
Yeah, exactly. You know, older stuff, weird stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, they have great film festival days. I saw Burt Reynolds Film Festival there a few years ago. I mean, great stuff.
Now, what would that have entailed? The longest yard, smoking the
bandit.
Well,
you know what? They had longest yard, wasn't it? No smoking the bandit.
No.
Heat was one of the movies. Okay. Gator.
Okay. Boogie Nights.
Now I'd have to look back. No Boogie Nights.
No Boogie Nights.
What's the movie when he's a stuntman? Hooper.
Okay.
And then I forget what the I'd have to look. Look back and see what the other two were, but those were the, very, very irate. There was no Smokey and the Bandit, but you live. Actually, my number one Burt movie might be Cannonball Run, which we did not get.
Cannonball Run. But, yeah. So neither of them were in there. I mean, what? That's a terrible job out of these guys. Are they just trying too hard?
I agree somewhat, but what made the whole thing interesting is it was a surprise. Like, mm-hmm. That's what Alamo does with their marathons. Like,
I see. So you don't know what it is. Right.
So it at least keeps you in anticipation. You know, if you saw that lineup, you might not show up to the theater, but if you...
okay, that's a good point.
You're like, ooh, what's next? What could be coming? Will it be Hooper?
Will it be Hooper?
But no, even with that, it was a great time. You know, it's just
that's
like
cool.
you sit and you look around and you're like, Jesus Christ, there's at least, 75 other people that are apparently this devoted to Burt Reynolds. what a sad commentary this is.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. Burt Reynolds was, and I don't know how long ago this was, I think it was inside of the last 3 years, he was at a Q&A before one of his movies, at the Arrow, which is just like a block from, like two blocks.
Yes, I remember hearing about that.
Yeah,
it
was just a few blocks from me.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that theater.
Well, the Alamo by me is showing, you probably wrapped up in this, Dave, all of the Vacation movies.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. No, I was good with Vacation. Well, okay, I'm going to make an unpopular opinion here. I didn't think Vacation was funny. I didn't think it was that funny.
Oh my God!
Maybe I'm too sensitive.
You get off this phone right now.
No, look. I didn't think it's kind of. I mean, it was. I got why everybody liked it.
The family trucks there. What are you talking about?
I may need to watch it again, but I thought it was going to be funnier. I just thought it was going to be funnier. But
John Candy, one of the great cameos ever.
I did enjoy that. The scene at the end of Wally World, I did enjoy that. Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Aunt Edna dead on the roof.
Yeah, no, that was all right. I mean, it was an invented film.
I'm not a big Vegas Vacation guy.
That's a terrible movie. But I will tell you this: European Vacation, that was an enjoyable film. That was fun. Christmas Vacation.
That is the sleeping giant of the vacation universe. There's a lot of great stuff in European Vacation.
For sure. That was definitely wacky. I need to see. I've seen a good parts of Christmas Vacation, but I haven't seen the whole thing, and I need to get on that.
That's another movie I'll call overdone or overrated.
Oh, interesting. So you're in the overrated cap with that. That's interesting. Okay.
It's okay. It's
all right.
Fine. Listen, but people go ham for that movie, like needlessly.
Yeah.
Look. But
there's a lot of Christmas movies that people do go ham over, and some is deserved and some isn't. And a good example, where are you at with A Christmas Story on August?
I do like A Christmas Story, but I also, I will obviously not say I discovered The Christmas Story, but I remember A Christmas Story when it was first out in like 1985.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of fell in love with it back then when I was Ralphie's age. And if I see it, great. I'll say this. I watch It's a Wonderful Life every Christmas season.
But that's an iconic movie. Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. It's like I'm not putting it in that level, So
okay.
If Christmas Story's on, you can watch 5 minutes of it,
Right.
And move on,
Yeah.
It's whatever.
I like the movie. I thought it was a good movie, too. I did think it was charming. I did like the character. The characters are very, very entertaining. Like, really good characters. But I agree with you. I don't get the hype. It just feels like an extra long sitcom to me. Like, it's like, let's say they put together like 4 sitcom episodes of a show, and that was a movie.
It's amazing to watch today because it's like, here is an entire film built around an 8-year-old trying to get a weapon.
It's just a BB gun. It's not the same thing. It's just a BB gun.
Oh, I know, but just the visual of this kid, like, acquiring a gun, like, in this day and age. I have no problem with it, but it's, like, it's funny
that movie hasn't kind of fallen victim to, like, oh my God, we can't have kids with guns. Like,
right.
You know.
I get that. I do see that.
Everyone loves Dopey Ralphie in his fucking pink bunny suit.
Yeah. And it was set in the 40s anyway.
The only modernish Christmas movie I love is Elf.
Elf is good. Elf is solid. I like that. Yeah, Elf is good. I'm a fan.
And the Billy Bob Thornton Santa movie, Bad Santa.
Oh, Bad Santa! I've not seen it, but everyone loves it. I should.
Tremendous.
I should check
Definitely
it out.
Definitely worth your time. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll give that.
Well,
a look.
Dave, now that we've taken random questions all the way to Christmas, I think we're.
It's funny.
But this was good. I'm glad to get a mid season. You know, we get to have a little more of the fun movies than the Oscar time.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But you made a great point in the beginning of the show where you said that both Eighth Grade and Sorry to Bother You are a welcome reprieve from all the action movies and the comic book stuff. And I could not agree more on that, because that's the first thing I said when I went to see Sorry to Bother You. I'm like, oh, it's so nice. Get to see something else, you know? I mean, superpower this, lasers that, Star Wars this. And it's, you're kind of... And even like animated films, or a ton of animated films about that time, and we're like,
oh yeah,
it was good to get a break from it.
I don't care how good they are. It's just like, I don't know. What's the there's an animated Spider-Man coming out, which actually looks kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Like they're, but I don't know. I can't sit through some fucking comic book movie, please, or cartoon.
And isn't it true that...
I'm 41 years of age, Dave. You want me to sit and watch some goddamn fucking Simpsons cartoon?
Right. Fair point. Fair points on that. I'll make an exception.
Guess what, Dave? I'm not one of the guys you'll see posted a Simpsons meme on the board. I'll just say that. I'll leave it at that.
Well, I can't. I do love Simpsons memes. So I respect you. Respect you totally for that.
I don't mind them either. I'm not complaining or critiquing. I'm just saying you won't see me putting them up there.
Yeah. So quick question for you. Do you think either of these two movies that we just talked about will be nominated for Best Picture or even anything as we get into Oscar season?
100%. I'm Sorry to Bother You will be.
I thought so too. Yeah.
Unless, no, 100%. I'm Sorry to Bother You. And it should be. You know, it's definitely, that's the kind of movie you want to, you know, promote and push at Oscar time, you know. Mm-hmm. It'll be, you know, some kind of long odds to win. Never going to win the Oscar, but, mm-hmm. you know, hey, let them get nominated. Have your fun.
Yeah.
Frankly, I think Eighth Grade will, too. It's just such a good goddamn movie, you know. It's,
interesting.
It may be too early in the cycle where it gets forgotten and shuffled out, you know. But, I mean, the girl is honestly fantastic, like, that stars in the movie. And, I don't know. I would really be rooting for that one to get nominated, just because, you know, you always got to see what comes out in the fall. But with 10 nominations, you know,
right,
we're very early in the cycle, and I think Black Klansman's a big threat off the bat. So, are they going to nominate three movies from the summer? That's hard to see, but you never know. We'll see what happens.
Well, I do appreciate.
I mean, Dunkirk was technically a summer movie. That, you know.
Oh, that movie was overrated. I finally saw some parts, not the whole thing, but a lot of it. And I'm like, I get your point. It was just not worth all the hype. I didn't get it at all.
Yeah, just, you know.
What is the big deal with that movie?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
But eighth
time
grade.
Will tell, Dave. We
I'll get check it out. I'll give, you know, you've convinced me. I don't know if I'll check it out now, but I'll check it out at some point. Because, you know, when you say something like that and you have glowing remarks about a movie, I think it's totally worth it. That's convincing enough to me, because I value your opinion on the film very, very highly.
Oh, you're too kind, Dave. You're too kind. But I think you'll dig it. If you like Lady Bird, I think you'll definitely like this movie.
Okay. So, and okay. That's good to know, because I do like Lady Bird. Yeah.
Well, you know, I wouldn't guess I would give two shits about some dopey teenage girl story. So, you know, if a movie can kind of suck you in with that, then...
Right.
Then it's doing its job, you know. So
cool.
Both movies ace that. So
love it. Well, quick. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I was just basically saying this has been a lot of fun, and did the Yankees end up winning? I didn't even check that.
We're 1-1 in the 10th, Dave.
Wow.
We've carried this whole podcast through the game here. Yanks got a man on, one out.
Okay.
No Dick is at bat, so I'm going to go catch up with the game.
All right.
Great talking to you, though. Great always being on the cast. And we will see you no later than Oscar time.
Yep. I love it, buddy.
For another convening. So.
Love it.
All right, buddy. Great to talk to you.
Thanks.
Okay.
Likewise. Take care.
Bye.
All right. Couple quickies back on the program. That was good stuff, and this is good, and it's time to say goodnight. We'll be back next week with our PGA Championship recap. John and Mike will be there joining me for that one. Here we go again. There we go. You can reach us at DidCow on Twitter or on the web, www.didcow.com. I'm Dave Medina. Hope you enjoyed it. Check out all of our other podcasts on the feed. We'll see you next time.